Hi, this is Brian Shearer from Comic Review Weekly. Comic Review Weekly is now being published through the Podcast Network. Our new address is comicreview.thepodcastnetwork.com. We'll be uploading the shows at the Podcast Network as well as the gravyboy.com site until the middle of February. After that, all the shows can be found at comicreview.thepodcastnetwork.com. We hope you'll stick with us through 2007 as Comic Review Weekly continues to grow, and we'll see you on the Podcast Network.
In a world filled with podcasts, this is one.
It's time for Comic Review Weekly. And now, here's your host.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 55 of Comic Review Weekly, the podcast where you get the lowdown on comic books, hosted by me, Andy Slaughter. Comic Review Weekly is brought to you by the creative minds at Jack Rabbit Studios, home of Gravy Boy, the comic for folks who like a little hero and their heroes. Please check it out at www.gravyboy.com. I am joined today by Brian Shearer. Hello, Brian.
Hello, Andrew Slaughter. What's up?
Great to have you again. Great to have you. Great to bounce ideas and stuff off of you. Great to have the, you know, just the insider's insight, I think, that you bring. So,
well, and a more articulate introduction could not be asked for. Thank you, Andy. You know,
articulation is my specialty. And with that, I got some comic book reviews. This She-Hulk, written by Dan Slott, has been it's been in the comic book news, and people have been talking about this. I don't know how popular it's gotten. I still think the sales are. My impression is that the sales, they like to be better. You know, I mean, they would like them to be better up there with some of, you know, your regular Spider-Man and whatnot. But as far as quality goes, I've heard nothing but good things about this book. So I picked out a couple of issues we're going to look at. She-Hulk number 10 and 11. Like I said, written by Dan Slott with pencils from Paul Smith and inks by Joe Rubenstein. So in She-Hulk, it's Jennifer Walters, right? Mm-hmm. Jennifer Walters is a lawyer who specializes in superhero cases. And it's got kind of a humorous bent to it, and it's just about the different kind of crazy legal cases that superheroes get into. You know, not meant to be taken 100% seriously, but it does take itself seriously enough to drive the plot forward and to have, you know, some good subplots that really keep you reading. So recently, She-Hulk was put under a love spell by former Avenger Star Fox, and she elopes with John Jameson, who was the son of Spider-Man hater J. Jonah Jameson. Most of the two issues that I read revolve around the subplot of She-Hulk's friend and colleague, Pug, trying to put a cork in this love spell. But my favorite part out of these two was a side story in issue 10 where She-Hulk eats dinner with the family. She meets the family of her new husband and gets to eat dinner with J. Jonah himself. Enraged at being the father-in-law of a freak, he unleashes one of his spare spider slayers on her. He kind of keeps one in the attic. And he's sitting up there controlling it, and she's trying to fight it off, and then she just runs upstairs and just tells him to stop. And it's pretty funny how they actually kind of get along in the end, and I think J. Jonah is pretty happy about his new daughter-in-law because she kind of agrees to do something for him. But that's just in a nutshell. That's what She-Hulk is about, just fun antics. Great writing and a great time. A definite standout from the rest of Marvel right now. It got 4 out of 5 stars for me. Brian, you've read this book a little bit more than I have, so if you could, you know, throw in any.
Well, it's been a while since I've read it. I liked it. I think I don't think it's in my the last stack I got. I don't think I've read any since this issue.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a good. Everybody kept talking about how good it was, and I think Mike Ringo on his blog had talked about how good it was and stuff. So I picked it up, and it's pretty much just revolves around her career and her subplot between the pug who likes her, and then never really nothing comes about. But it's just well written, and the art is pretty good. And if you just want a light, fun, easy book, then pick up She-Hulk.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that stuck out to me, and it was just She-Hulk's pretty average. I mean, she's kind of a person of average integrity. You know, it seems like she's willing to pull strings a little bit to, you know, even if it's not the quote unquote right thing to do. She gets drunk in bars with supervillains. She has, you know, flings with people.
And who doesn't get drunk in bars with supervillains?
I don't.
Really?
I mean, it would be freaking awesome if that happened to me, but my life
just
isn't
not hanging
cool.
out in the right bar. All right. Yeah, okay. That's pretty much all I have for that one.
All right. Well, we'll move on then to a title by Image, Truth, Justin, and the American Way, number one, written by Aaron Williams and Scott Kurtz, with art by Giuseppe Ferrario.
You saying that right?
I think I am, actually. I think I'm saying that one right. Humorous.
It's French, you know. I think actually this artist is from, I think he's French.
Oh, I thought it was Spanish. Well.
Maybe we need to have a contest. Apologies for either mispronouncing your name or your location, as the case may be.
Okay. Well, anyway, Truth, Justin, and the American Way is another sort of humorous take on the superhero by pure chance story. You know, you're just what I mean by that is you're just a normal guy running along in your life, and then something, boom, falls in your lap, and you're a superhero, and your life is completely changed. So, Justin gets a superpowered suit from a baggage mix-up. He's about to have a bachelor party, which gets busted by police officers looking for the other bag, for the bag that he mistakenly got. I forgot what's in there. That's what is in the bag. I forgot what was in Justin's bag that he lost now. So, I mean, I only read that. That's really all that happens. You're just introduced to Justin. He's just your average guy about to get married. His fiance kind of seems like a shrill. I think, you know, you would probably, if I read further, you'd probably see a little bit of division between them. Writing is okay. It's not bad, but we've kind of been over this sort of territory before in other books. you know, we have different humorous takes on the superhero genre. I'm not sure if, you know, I would really go out of my way to read another one with a completely new character. It's a little bit too silly for my taste, but the art, I'd like to point out, is exceptional. It's very professional, this style by I apologize if
our
I mispr-
potential French Spaniard
Giuseppe Ferrario. Very, you know, it's just a style that you could, you know, it's very, very unique. So, but it overall, it just appears like there's a lot of this kind of story out there right now, and it's probably not something I'm going to look into too much. But I gave it 3 stars out of 5. Did you pick up any more issues of that?
You know, I don't remember. I remember that issue. I think there was one other one. To be quite honest, I don't remember what much went on after that. I mean, I enjoyed it, but it's been a while, and I've read a lot of stuff since then. So.
Yeah, and we read a lot of comics, so I mean, there's. Anyway, next up, I've got Super Real, number 1 and 2, published by Super Real Graphics. Series is created by Jason Martin,
who was our neighbor at San Diego Con. He was right at the table next to us. No way. Yes.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Did you get to talk to him any?
Yeah. We were there for just about a week, so it's kind of hard not to.
Definitely.
Nice guy.
Well, Super Real is basically MTV's The Real World meets superhero comic book craziness. It so focuses on five self-absorbed, materialistic 20-somethings who partake in an experiment to give them superpowers in order to entertain America's bored TV audiences. It's a reality show. They're going to go on this show and, you know, live in the same place, kind of like The Real World or Big Brother or something. But the only trick is they'll have superpowers and they'll have to do things with them. They'll have to be selfless.
Like build mobile homes and repave streets.
Get jobs.
That was just an early draft of the reality show. No.
But the true purpose of the grouping is kind of a mystery. There's powerful men pulling the strings behind this, and the powerful men are kind of caricatured as well. Well, they're TV producers, but then above them, they're sort of caricatures of President Bush and Dick Cheney, and you kind of get into that in issue two, I believe. Kind of a funny little scene on the Cheney on an interpretation of the Bush Cheney dynamic. You know, the writing is good. It's well paced. It's enjoyable despite the unlikability of the characters. It's funny, definitely. Doesn't take itself too seriously. The artwork, it's kind of rough in that independent way, but it's stylish. It's got its own thing going on, and it didn't, you know, it didn't take away at all. I mean, it definitely works for the book. It's a little high on the fanboy cheesecake factor for me, but that's well within line with what this book is. So, you know, no points taken away for that. All in all, it was an effective satire on both comic books and television. And what I thought was cool about this book was, you know, as I started to read it, I was like, you know, I've kind of seen unlikable people in the role of heroes in The Ultimates and in other books. So at first I was like, kind of seen this before, but there's a couple other levels working for this one that might catch you by surprise. It caught me by surprise, so, you know, I'm kind of keeping my eye out for it. If I see any issues, I wouldn't mind seeing where this goes, even though the characters are just completely shallow. I mean, you hate them in a way, but it's a very interesting premise. So I gave it 3.5 out of 5 stars.
All right. Anything else this week?
Well, I could talk about Mouse.
Okay.
Well, first of all, I've got to say about Mouse, I can't really do this justice in a single review. I picked this up from my library, actually, and just the emotional weight of this book is such that, you know, it's for someone like me, I just can't. It's hard to imagine. But Mouse is by Art Spiegelman, and many of you have probably heard of this. It won many awards in the 90s for a comic book narration of the events of the Holocaust. It's like I said, it's written by Art Spiegelman, and in two books, one and two, the author tells the story of his father's survival during the Holocaust. We see it through the eyes of the author through years of interviews with his father. The story takes us from a wealthy home in Poland to where his father, you know, is raised and begins, to the Nazi concentration camp of Auschwitz. From there, we see how simply being a Jewish person was an uphill struggle for survival in an unparalleled climate of hate. Talk about the characters. The author of the book, Art, is, you know, he's the son. He doesn't really have a very close relationship with his father at the beginning of the book. His mother is Vladek's first wife, Anja, and Vladek and Anja Anja survived the Holocaust as well. They were married during the Holocaust, and you know, they split the Jewish people into camps, you know, based on male or female. So they were split up for a lot of that. And his mother actually suffered from depression for most of her life. She, in 1968, she commits suicide, which was, you know, unforgettable, or it made such an impact on Vladek and on art. But Vladek, the father, at this point where we catch up with him in the story, is an old man. His health is ailing. He's very, very tight with money and resources. And art is, he's so, what amazes me about this book is that art is so open about who he is and his relationship with his father, but who his father is. I mean, his father sometimes does things and says things that would offend, I think, our sensibilities. And in fact, in the book, Art calls his dad a Jewish stereotype. He refers to his dad as a Jewish stereotype. Vladek has remarried his second wife, Mala, and throughout the entire, they just bicker. Mala says that Vladek is impossible to live with. Vladek says that Mala's just a gold digger who just wants all of his money, and she kind of turns out to be that in a way. It's pretty sad. I mean, because you know, you get the, you know, on the one hand, you get the history, the backstory of the concentration camps, which Vladek just tells so straightforwardly. I mean, you know, you never get hit over the head in this book with the emotions or the just how horrible these things were. Vladek just tells it out, just says it right, you know, flat out. This is what, you know, the Nazis did to us. They, you know, they beat us. They slaughtered us by the thousands, you know, and somehow he's come out of this and survived. And then on the other hand, you've got the history of the son and the father, and slowly you see that relationship develop. And it's not as if Art just sat down at one point and just recorded and said, "All right, tell me about the Holocaust." It's broken up over such a long period of time. But it's really one of the most real, you know, emotionally true books out there. I think it's you know, it's set the bar so high for the sequential art form, and it's definitely, you know, being comic book fans, I think many of us can understand that feeling, that our love of comic books, you know, the comic books as a genre, as an art form, isn't really taken seriously by the mainstream media, by the world at large. Well, you know, this book is one of the things that will break that has changed that perception in the past. So I definitely recommend, if you haven't read it, you need to go out and do so. I mean, the characters are so three-dimensional. Excellent use of metaphor. You know, in the book, it's not people. It's, you know, all of the characters, all the people are broken down into animal groups based on what country they were from. And doing it this way, you know, I think Art Spiegelman was very smart, in that it does kind of separate us just enough to where we can get through this. But, you know, it separates us enough, but then you have to come back and realize that it all really did happen. And then that's where it hits you, I think. But, you know, Jewish people were represented by mice, the Germans, cats, naturally, and then the Polish were represented by pigs. I believe the Americans were represented by dogs, like golden retrievers or something like that. Anyway, like I said, just an amazing, amazing read. Might put tears in your eyes. I give it 5 out of 5 stars. Have you ever read Mouse?
I have not read Mouse, actually. Mm-hmm. I should have at this point, but I haven't. But sometime I will. I think several people I know had to read it in college, actually.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's great as a history tool as well. I mean, those personal accounts and you know, it's not just so heavy with words. I mean, you can give it to a younger person and they'd probably be likely to, you know, read it. And it's so memorable. Those mm-hmm. images that Spiegelman, you know, puts in his book are so memorable. I mean, it goes back to what we were saying earlier about, you know, the pictures being worth 1,000 words, and mm-hmm. that being the real strength of the sequential art form. So,
yep. All right. Anything else?
No, I think I've rambled on enough.
Okay. Well, we'll end on that note this weekend. And if you want to give us an email, you can email me at brian@gravyboy.com or
andy@gravyboy.com. Join us next week at here.
The internet is not a place, Andy.
Join us back at the internet for another episode of Comic Review Weekly. I look forward to seeing you next week.